Good morning. I'm Anthony Noble, registration number 33910, and I represent the appellant, Andres Tolosa. At counsel's table with me is Ruchi Kapoor, co-counsel in this case. Mr. Tolosa came to the United States in 1999 when he was 13 years old, and he came with his family from Germany. His family were refugees from Ethiopia. In this case, he pleaded guilty to attempt to possess and distribute a Schedule II controlled substance, which is a conviction that renders him presumptively mandatorily deportable. When he found out of the consequences of the conviction, he filed a 35C motion in the district court, and that was denied without a hearing. In that 35C motion, he alleged that his attorney's representation was ineffective because his attorney didn't advise him of the fact that this conviction was subjecting to mandatory deportation without any discretionary relief in immigration court in the removal proceedings. That motion was denied without an evidentiary hearing, and then he appealed to this court. And a division of this court reviewed the precedent that was available to it at the time and found that a defense attorney has an obligation to advise a non-citizen defendant considering entering a plea to a drug conviction, which would be an aggravated felony for immigration purposes, that felony subjects him to presumptive mandatory deportation. So that division of this court remanded the case for an evidentiary hearing on whether or not Mr. Tolosa was appropriately advised of the immigration consequences. The district court conducted an evidentiary hearing and heard testimony from both Mr. Tolosa and from his attorney, who is a deputy public defender. And the district court concluded that the advice that was given by the deputy public defender was adequate under prevailing precedent at the time. The district court's error in this case is not in accepting the attorney's testimony. The error here is in finding that testimony about the advice given to Mr. Tolosa was adequate under the Sixth Amendment. And if you go through the transcript of the evidentiary hearing, you'll see that the deputy public defender consistently testifies about the advice that he was given. And his testimony is that he advised Mr. Tolosa that this conviction will make you deportable. He didn't convey to Mr. Tolosa that this is a conviction that subjects him to mandatory deportation, and he didn't convey to Mr. Tolosa that this is a conviction in which he would have no opportunity or no avenue to discretionary relief in removal proceedings.
Could you articulate a difference between presumptively mandatorily deportable and removable?
Yes. Removable gives the impression that there's some discretion, that someone isn't subject to mandatory removal, that they're removable, which means that they can be removed. Whereas the statute actually says that the Attorney General shall remove a person convicted of an aggravated felony, a drug offense that Mr. Tolosa pleaded guilty to. So that's what the distinction here is. Throughout the testimony of the deputy public defender, he said that the advice that he gave to Mr. Tolosa was that you will be removable, which gives Mr. Tolosa the impression that there's some kind of discretion in the removal, but the immigration statute requires removal for a drug offense that he was convicted of.
Well, what's your basis for saying that the word removable or deportable implies to Mr. Tolosa that there's going to be some discretion as to whether, in fact, he is deported?
Well, Your Honor, what happened here is that he didn't convey this virtual certainty of the deportation that would result as...
I think you're changing my question. At one point, the testimony of the PD was to Mr. Tolosa, you're out. I just can't say when ICE is going to come and look for you or whether they're going to find you. What's discretionary about that?
Well, Your Honor, I think that that's, he said that in a different context. What he was testifying about when he said that you're out was that at the time, Mr. Tolosa was out of ICE custody, and this is one thing that he repeated, you know, several times throughout his testimony, that he was a little bit confused about this case because, unlike his regular non-citizen client convicted of a drug offense, you know, he had a client here who was a non-citizen but wasn't in ICE custody. So he was talking about how he was out of custody, not you're out of the country. So he was saying that, you know.
Finish your thought, and then I have a
question. Yeah, he was saying that you're out, and therefore, I don't know when ICE is going to find you or when they're going to pick you up, as opposed to a client who is in ICE custody and who would be picked up by ICE immediately because he'd be in the jail.
The trial court also determined, though, that counsel properly advised defendant that, quote, he was going to be deported, in a quote, and that, quote, it was simply a matter of when they were going to come get him. End of quote. Is that also a different context? Or
well, that first part, when the trial court found that the public defender advised him that you will be deported, I mean that's not reflected by the testimony that was given. And the public defender was very, very consistent throughout his whole testimony, and he never actually said that he advised Mr. Tolosa that he will be deported. He advised him that he will be deportable. So this is where he didn't convey the mandatory nature of the deportation consequence of this conviction. And then on the second part, I think that the trial court has made the same mistake, thinking that, you know, that you're out, thinking that, you know, that's advice that you're out of the country, not that you're out of custody, and therefore I don't know when ICE will pick you up. So the mistake.
Well, isn't that inherent in telling somebody, though, they're deportable? That assumes that ICE looks for them and succeeds in finding them, and then they're deportable. So, I mean, isn't there always going to be some level of uncertainty in counsel's advice?
Not with a drug conviction. With a drug conviction, it's absolutely clear that deportation is mandatory.
Well, only if they find them.
Yes, but these are separate issues. You know, first is, what is the consequence of the conviction, and the consequence here is presumptive mandatory deportation. And then the second question is, well, you know, what's the likelihood that you are going to be deported?
Does the phrase presumptive mandatory deportation appear in the statute? Or is that something?
No, that's kind of language that, you know, this court, our Supreme Court, and the US Supreme Court has developed. And you know, I'm not sure if you understand the meaning of presumptive mandatory deportation, but there are really two components to the consequence. You know, the first part is that a drug conviction like this is subjects somebody to mandatory deportation, and that's because the statute says the Attorney General shall remove, you know, a person convicted of a drug offense, a controlled substance offense. Now, the presumptive mandatory aspect to the consequence is the fact that you are subject to mandatory deportation because of this offense, but it's presumptive mandatory deportation because there's no relief in immigration court for this kind of offense. So there's no discretion that can be exercised by the immigration court when someone has been convicted of this kind of controlled substance offense. So this is another problem with the advice that was given by defense counsel. He focused on this kind of phrase that, you know, you will be deportable. But then when he was questioned about, well, did you ever actually advise him about whether or not he'd have any relief available in the circuit court, he wasn't able to say that he did. In fact, he said that he did not, and he said that it's not his usual practice to advise about the procedures in immigration court. So even if you can construe his advice is conveying to Mr. Tolosa that this conviction subjects him to mandatory deportation, there's no evidence in the record that he was ever advised about the lack of discretionary relief in immigration court. And that was really the purpose that he filed the 35C motion, and that was the purpose for the remand. I mean, the division of this court that remanded it to the district court made it absolutely clear that there's an obligation to advise of the immigration consequences, and that includes giving advice that this conviction subjects the person to presumptive mandatory deportation.
Were the discretionary provisions still available after 1996, or had they been repealed?
I think that, you know, I'm not exactly sure of the answer to that question, Your Honor, but I think that Padilla talks about how immigration law hadn't really changed since the 90s, that there was this radical change in immigration law and policy, and then we pretty much have the same kind of law and policy in place at the moment. But I think that, you know, what we're looking at here, though, really, is, you know, what was the state of the law at the time that he entered the guilty plea? And when he entered this guilty plea, there was the possibility that if he pleaded to something else, that even though it might subject him to deportation, that there may be some relief available in immigration court. And that's especially true for Mr. Tolosa, who had been here for 10 years, almost 10 years at the time that he pleaded guilty, and he did have this possibility of cancellation of removal for, you know, for certain types of convictions, like the conviction, his first conviction, which was a drug conviction, but it wasn't an aggravated felony for immigration purposes.
Now, help me with the scope of review. The trial court made certain factual findings, one of which Judge Roman read to you. Are we reviewing that? Do we affirm that if there's any support for it in the record? I mean, are we bound by that if there's any support in the record?
That's correct, Your Honor. If there's support in the record for that factual finding, then
okay.
You give deference.
And then the trial court found that the advice was adequate for purposes of the first prong under Strickland. Do we review that deferentially or de novo?
That factual finding is reviewed deferentially clearly erroneous. Yes, and the reason why that finding is clearly erroneous is because the testimony was that you will be deportable. That was the advice given by counsel. But the trial court found that the testimony was that you will be deported. So the trial court's finding is not supported by the record. The testimony of defense counsel, which was that the advice that he gave was that you will be deportable.
Thank you.
And I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time. Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Emmy Lindley, registration number 39075, and I represent the people in this matter. Defendant has failed to demonstrate ineffective assistance of counsel under the Sixth Amendment. First, he did not establish deficient performance. In this case, in the evidentiary hearing, it was revealed that plea counsel informed the defendant that as a result of this plea, he will be deportable and that you're out. I'm not sure when ICE is going to contact you or how. In Padilla v. Kentucky, the U.S. Supreme Court held that when it is clear that a defendant is eligible for deportation, counsel should inform defendant that his deportation is virtually mandatory.
Ms. Lickman, let me ask you a question based on what you just read. So you used the word deportable, and it, of course you were listening to Mr. Noble, and he was telling us that there's a difference between deportable and deported. And I take it you agree that what was used was the word deportable.
I think that's the quote, yes.
Okay. So how does make you deportable different from saying you could be deported if it's a mandatory situation?
I think that's a distinction without a difference. In Padilla, they use the word, or the U.S. Supreme Court uses the word eligible for removal. And I think to say you will be deported, you will be deportable is the same thing as you will be eligible for removal. And in that way, I think it's a distinction without a difference, and I think going back to Judge Webb's earlier question, I think there's always a chance that ICE does not find you right away, or, you know, I've done a lot of these cases, and sometimes ICE doesn't find the defendant for many, many years. I think that's where you're eligible for deportation, you're qualified for deportation, comes from.
So, a saying that makes you deportable is different than saying you could be deported then?
I think saying you will be deportable is different than saying you may be deported, you could be. I think will is definitely implies a virtual mandatory deportation as a result of your plea.
Okay.
Further to go to the defendant's argument that he was entitled to an advisement on discretionary relief. In Padilla, the defendant himself was not entitled to discretionary relief. He was convicted of a drug trafficking crime, large amounts of marijuana. I think it was marijuana crime, but it was a drug trafficking crime. And under the federal statutes that are cited in Padilla, that crime, he was not entitled to discretion or relief. And in that case, the U.S. Supreme Court did not hold that he was entitled to a separate advisement that he regarding discretionary relief. So I do not think that in this case the defendant is entitled to a separate advisement on discretionary relief. I think encompassed within plea counsel's advice that he will be deportable and that you are out. And
so when he said you are out, is that talking about out of custody or out of the country?
I would read in context, it meant that you're out of the country, and as the defendant or opposing counsel previously stated, the trial court interpreted it that way, and I think those findings are entitled to deference.
Well, I know the defense attorney's testimony, he kept saying it was an unusual situation because most of his clients were in ICE custody, but that he was out, and that as a result, he didn't know when the agents would find them, whether it would be in the courtroom, whether it would be on probation. So why do you interpret that as meaning out of the country?
I think read in context, earlier in the evidentiary hearings when I think plea counsel was talking about this, and I think the statement you're out came up during recross of plea counsel, and in that context, defense counsel was asking the defendant, you know, did you tell him he was deportable? And he said, you know, basically what he was trying to say was, we're out, I don't know when or how, but you will be deportable. In addition, I believe the defendant cannot demonstrate prejudice. The defendant has failed to demonstrate how the advisement of you will be deportable and you're out would have caused him to reject, or as opposed to the advisement that you're presumptively mandatory deportable, caused him to take the plea as opposed to insisting on trial, especially considering that the defendant was found with drugs on his person and confessed to the crime. That would not have been rational for him to reject the plea and proceed to trial, considering that he had an opportunity for probation, which allowed him to stay in the country out of custody for a few years before he was arrested by ICE. There are no further questions. I ask that you confirm the trial court's order.
On the issue of prejudice, I mean, he clearly established prejudice in this case. He came to the country in 1999. He was 13 at the time. He came with all of his family. He testified that his family were refugees from Ethiopia. He had no family in Germany where he came from. He had no family in Ethiopia. All his family were here in the United States. He was a lawful permanent resident. He'd been here for almost 10 years. Under those circumstances, as the court said in Kazadi, you know, these personal circumstances established prejudice. Now, the risk that he would have taken by going to trial would have been a 12-year sentence at maximum. It would have been 4 to 12 years. So what he would have done would have balanced the consequence of presumptive mandatory deportation with the risk of a 12-year sentence. And I think the cases that I've cited in the reply brief where other courts have found that given those kind of considerations that most people that have been here for a long time, have established roots in this country, have family here, would take that risk to avoid deportation. The Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court.
Let me ask you a question about that. If he gets the 12-year sentence by going to trial, if the worst case scenario happens, doesn't he still get deported after he finishes his prison sentence?
Yes, but he gets the opportunity of being acquitted and not being deported. And that's the risk that he would take here, is that, you know, does he just accept this plea and suffer the presumptive mandatory deportation consequence to a country that he has no family, or does he take this risk of trying to win a trial? And even though he should end up serving the maximum 12-year sentence, he can still have this opportunity that he may not be convicted and that he can avoid deportation.
And would that choice largely depend on how strong the evidence was against him as far as his likelihood of serving a substantial prison sentence and then ultimately being deported as opposed to risking for an acquittal?
Yes, Your Honor, that's going to be something that he's going to consider. And I think that what the U.S. Supreme Court has said, though, is that the consequence, the severe consequence of deportation often outweighs these other considerations. You know, we're not looking at a life sentence here or an indeterminate sentence. I mean, 12 years would be the maximum sentence. And usually on a drug offense, you know, probation is usually the sentence. And that was something, I think there was some testimony about the possibility of probation in this case as well. So on prejudice, his personal circumstances, you know, establish prejudice. Not only do they establish prejudice, but they also indicate that he wasn't properly advised, because if he had been here for almost 10 years and he came here as a 13-year-old and all of his family are in the country, when an attorney tells him that you're definitely going to be deported, is he really just going to sit there and say, okay, I don't think so? So I asked the court to find that the district court here made a factual error in its findings, that the testimony was that the advice given that was you will be deportable, and the court found that the testimony that the advice given was that you would be deported. So there's a clearly erroneous error there in the factual findings and the testimony. And to the extent that the court looks at the legal findings of the district court under a de novo review, there's a legal error as well to think that advice that you will be deportable satisfies the scope of all the instructions on the remand, that the court has to find whether or not the attorney advised of the presumptive mandatory nature of the deportation. So it asks the court to reverse the order denying post-conviction relief. Thank you.
Thank you both, counsel. We appreciate the arguments. The case stands submitted. We'll issue written opinion in due course.